happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Today we take a look at computers and we'll talk about how to find the right tech gift with our guest today, Peter Green. He is a computer consultant with Infostar.com. We'll also take all your personal computer questions. What technology gifts are on your wish list this year? I hope you'll join in our conversation. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can also post on our Facebook page. And Peter Green, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Always great, Larry.
Well, what tech gadgets are on your wish list for this holiday season? Do you have any?
I'll go all the way from small to big. You know, something that you can use as stocking stuffers to, well, you better wrap the box.
Mm-hmm.
So people have smartphones. Yeah. You travel. Having a battery pack is a nice little gift add-on. Mm-hmm. In fact, I even saw a kiosk in an airport recently that was just selling battery packs for smartphones. Protective cases for tablets, such as iPad or any tablet. And they come in all shapes and sizes, from stuff that looks like it's ballistic, you know, for protecting it from a pretty good fall, to just colorful and, you know, supporting your favorite sports team. Cable interfaces. So just a cable interface from a smartphone to a HD TV, Android, iPhone, iPad. So those cables can be a little costly. You know, maybe, you know, if you get a good deal looking on like eBay or Amazon, maybe $10, $15.
Yeah.
So those are good stocking stuffers. Android devices from Samsung and Google and Amazon. So things like the Amazon Echo and Echo Dot.
Yeah.
Google's Home and Home Mini. Music devices such as Sonos. And a wide variety of Bluetooth wireless speakers and headphones. So, you know, that's just... And for me, during the summer, you know, there are sunglasses out there that have Bluetooth interfaces, so they sync up with your iPhone, so while you're riding your bike, you can be listening to music, wireless.
Yeah.
And then the real small thing that's a great stocking stuffer, but not inexpensive, are things such as the Tile or Tracker, and that's Tile is spelled T-I-L-E. Another one is T-R-A-C-K-R. And those are keeping track of your keys, maybe your phone, maybe your wallet, your purse, your backpack. It allows you to figure out where it is.
I think that's cool.
Yeah. So, and those are really small. I mean, really, really small. So, and then, of course, new computers, you know, and those can be found, you know, in stores or online. A lot of suppliers out there for that. And what I did was I posted on my website on the main page at Infostar.com, and I realized I left out two websites that I've talked about over the years. Anywhere from Amazon, Best Buy, CNET. So these places, they sell the products. They also have customer reviews, and I encourage people to read customer reviews because you learn things about products from other people's experiences, and they may or may not affect your purchase decision, because you may find out that you should be looking at something else because you were looking at a feature that somebody commented on, and they said, well, I had a problem with this, so I found something else.
Yeah.
So, you know, suggestions like that. The two that I left out are buy.com and ebay.com, mm-hmm. and I'll update those in the next day or so. But a lot of good reviews, a lot of other suggestions. I mean, there's a lot out there, a lot of technology gifts.
I ordered one thing online, and then it was, I was told that I have to go to the store tomorrow, actually. I'll probably go over there tomorrow after work. Tomorrow's December 5th, right? I'll have to go over there after work, and hopefully it'll be there. You wonder sometimes if it's actually going to come, but
Yeah, you got to be patient sometimes. Sometimes you may have to wait until, if it's a real popular tech gift, sometimes you have to wait until after the holidays for the supply to catch up. And then one other comment. I recently have experienced some frustration with Microsoft Windows 10 updates. And I just caution people out there that are working with Windows 10 or looking at systems with Windows 10 that Microsoft's policy of just pushing out an update can affect your timeliness of wanting to use that computer or system because of an update, where you have to figure out, how do I fix what they broke?
Bill in Appleton has a question along those along the gift-giving lines, I think. Hi, Bill.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call. The question that I have, may I continue?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yep.
Okay, I am diabetic and I have severe vision problems. I'm not blind, but I cannot read regular size print. And I'm wondering if you can suggest something to assist me in using a computer with the print size being big enough. I cannot even read it with a magnifying glass.
Yeah. Is there a device out there for enlarging computer screen, what you see on the computer screen?
Well, there's one handy tip, and use if you're a Windows user, you can hold the scroll key down, the control key down, and use the scroll bar, the scroll piece on your mouse, to actually enlarge or decrease the size of what you see on your screen. And I actually use that quite often. The other suggestion would be to get a larger size monitor, and they're, you know, all the TVs now have computer interfaces. So my suggestion would be to get as large a screen as you can handle, you know, in the real estate that you have for your desktop. And then use the lowest resolution support for, they call it Super VGA, which is 800 by 600 or 1024 by 768 on a large screen would probably work well for you. So I'm talking about screens that are like 27, 28, 30, 32 inch screens, maybe 36. And I don't know if you're using a desktop or if you're using a laptop.
I'm using a laptop.
Okay. You could take the laptop into the store and ask to test it.
Good idea. Good idea.
Very good ideas. Well, that's good luck. And you know what? There are probably other people out there who could use that sort of what you just gave as advice, Pete. So
I know when I hook up my computer to a 50-inch screen, I'm like, wow, this is great. Everything's so easy to read and see.
There we go. Good luck, Bill. Thank you. Tim and Marinette, let's go to you next. Hi, Tim.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I recently read an article about a young scientist. He's a professor of electrical engineering out of UCLA, and he recently developed a company that invented disposable kits that you plug into the phone, and you put body fluid in them, and they'll detect diseases. I don't know if they're for sale yet, but I thought that was pretty high tech.
Wow. I haven't heard that.
When you say test water quality, too.
When you say detect diseases, like what kind of...
Like dung fever, malaria. It could probably test for diabetes. What these kits have is they have gold nanoreceptors. And what it does is it collects the information and then it sends it to a lab somewhere in the world. They do the test and then they send the information back to the phone.
Wow. That is something else.
Well, when you think about a blood tester, you know, people that have diabetes and now they test their blood, it's, you know, completing a circuit when they put that strip in.
Right, so, and you could put saliva or any other body fluid and test for, his objective is for third world countries where some of these villages are hundreds of miles away from a lab.
Oh, that's what a great discovery that'd be.
And I thought, you know, what other application? And then I started to think, you know, it would probably be handful inside like nursing homes where some of these people can't get out.
Right.
Yeah.
Boy. So I don't know if they're for sale yet, but it's worth looking into if somebody's interested in that kind of thing.
Yeah. I'm sure it's going to go under scrutiny from the Food and Drug Administration before they, you know, allow it to go out. So, yeah. But, you know, those things that are in the pipeline today, we usually see within, you know, five to 10 years.
Or even less, hopefully.
You know, just like they have that colon test versus colon, you know, doing an actual colonoscopy.
Yeah. Tim, thanks for bringing that up. It's something to look into for sure. Let's go to Tom in Madison next. Tom, hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I'm embarrassed to even ask the question, but I got an XP question. We're in the process of upgrading our equipment, but there's still one application that we have that requires XP for hardware and software. And I had two drives for this computer, and both of them were working, and I swapped them out, and it now says the primary drive is not recognized or not found.
So when you say you swapped them out, what did you do with this drive that's not being recognized?
I just I took one primary drive out and I put another primary drive in. So it's there were two drives that were both working. They just had different software on them. They both have XP, of course.
Were they set up to boot up with XP, each one?
Yes.
They were. And you sure you got them hooked up properly?
Well, I think so. I mean, the ribbon cable and the connectors, it's not too complicated, it doesn't seem.
Yeah. I mean, those things do fail. How old is the drive?
One of them is pretty new. I can't tell you exactly when it was purchased, probably about a year ago. Mm-hmm. And the other one is older than that.
Okay. Sometime, have you tried it a few times where you've, you know, disconnected it, reconnected it?
Yeah, three or four, probably.
Okay. Does it sound like something's spinning? Does it sound like it's working?
You know, it started. I mean, I thought I heard it start, spinning. I listened for that as well. So if they're not spinning, that means they're dead, I suppose.
Huh? Right. Usually, I mean, I used to carry a stethoscope around and, you know, check and see if the patient was still with us.
Not a bad idea, actually.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can hear the little knocking and... When it's knocking, that's not a good sign.
Yeah.
The scratching sound, depending upon the level, is okay. But, if it constantly sounds like it's knocking and ticking, that's usually not a good sign.
Okay.
What I would do is, if you have room to cable it up so that you have the primary drive that works and the other drive is a secondary drive.
Okay.
Sometimes with older machines, you have to make sure that you're... pins are correct.
Okay.
So that's another thing. If you may, sometimes they have it on the drive, or you could probably go online and maybe find reference information. There is this like little black plastic, very small piece that usually unions two pins together to create the connection. And it tells it whether it's the master or the slave. So if you put in a slave drive and it's supposed to be a master, it may or may not work in your system. So when you do the primary drive that you know works, hook up the one that you're having a problem with as a secondary drive, make sure it's the slave designation, and then see if you can still access it.
So the one, so that would also be called the secondary drive?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep. Good. So... You know, one thing is to say, okay, it's bootable, but it may not be bootable, but yet it may still be accessible.
Yeah.
So you may still be able to get to the information that's on the drive.
Okay.
And if all else fails, sometimes what I do is I have a kit that I hook up the drive as an external with a USB port and see if I can still access it. Sometimes you have to try things over and over again and get lucky or hold it in your hands just right, and it works.
I've experienced that. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Okay, good.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Peter Green of InfoStar.com, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. Tomorrow at this time, we'll be talking to best-selling Wisconsin author Jennifer Cheverini about her latest book. It's titled Enchantress of Numbers. That's at 11. Right now, visiting with Peter Green of Infostar.com, taking your computer questions. And you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Carrie in Balsam Lake up next with a question. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a technical question.
Okay.
2 weeks ago, my email was shut down by my provider, which is CenturyLink. They said they received hundreds of spam emails in their system, and it was fixed, but I continually have to reboot my email address when I'm reading my emails. It also brings me to an unsecured site that is says it's CenturyLink, so I have to hit my email, and then it brings me to a secured site that has a HTTP in front of it. So I'm wondering, should I discontinue that email and go to a Gmail instead, because it seems something is wrong.
So you're saying that your email, was it just your email address, or were there other email addresses involved with this?
No, it's just one email address.
So nobody else's. They were saying that yours was the one that was having spam issues.
Well, that's what they told me.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
All right. So what that means is that somehow, somewhere, your email address got on, maybe from somebody else's email system, got hacked. Your email got out there as part of that, and then they just decided to spoof or bombard your email with, you know, endless junk email coming at you. So that created unwanted traffic for them. What's interesting is that they didn't simply, you know, block it or, you know, do something to prevent that from happening. So that makes me a little cautious about how much are they really doing versus, you know, shutting down your email because they're saying that's the culprit. I personally would probably use or set up a Gmail account. And
I have one already. I just don't use it a lot.
And what you could do is you could forward, you know, for a time being, your email that's going to the CenturyTel one to your Gmail account as you transition. And when you said that it was a secured site, HTTPS is the secured site. If it doesn't have the S in front of it, it's just a normal web address.
Yeah.
So it has to have an S in front.
Yeah. Yep. The S stands for secured.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
The other thing is, when you access the email through the web, so if you were like logging into a website and putting in your username and password, the same thing goes for using a Gmail account. You should still have some kind of antivirus protection on your system. In case you decide to download files, your system will be set up to scan those files as you download them.
Okay. And what antivirus system do you recommend?
One large company. There's Norton McAfee, which has been out for a long time. I usually say that they've got a target on their back. At work, we use Avast, which is also a combination of AVG. The Avast bought AVG, so they're really one and the same. I've had that on our systems for probably about a good year, where I'm managing several systems all together, and it seems to be fairly well behaved. So it would be something I would feel confident recommending you to use.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep,
thanks very much for calling. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. George in Partyville, you're next. Hi, George.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I've got an older computer. I don't know, it's probably 8 years old. It has the XP system on it, and which they don't support any longer. So the SQL files aren't coming up anymore. So I was wondering, what's the easiest way just to maybe put a different operating system up?
Are you talking about upgrading your hardware to a new operating system?
Well, I think so, yeah. I think that's what has to be done. You can't...
Yeah, I don't know if you can do that with an 8-year-old.
Yeah, with an 8-year-old system, you might be able to use Windows 7, but I wouldn't make the jump to Windows 10. That would probably be a little bit too far of a leap.
Wasn't there a Windows 8?
I'd probably stick with 7 before I jump to 8.
Okay, so, and that is something you can download?
No, you'd probably have to go to a site like either eBay or Amazon to see if you can find, you know, purchase a copy of Windows 7.
Okay. So that'll come in, if you can purchase that, then it'll come in a hard drive, or I mean a disk form?
In a DVD. Let me ask you a couple of questions about the hardware that you have. Do you know the specifications of your XP system?
So, I think XP had been out. I don't, but XP had been out, I think, about 2 years before we bought the system.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 3 even.
Okay.
So, and then I think they stopped supporting it about 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we had it about 5 years, I'm thinking, before they stopped supporting it.
Well, I'm gonna throw a little caution to the wind on this one. Memory is important to Windows. And if you have a vintage enough of a system where it's old and you can't upgrade the memory, Windows 7, it can operate with 2 gigs of RAM. But it would probably like four would be better.
Okay.
Hard drive space is going to be an issue. And if you have a hard drive where you're looking at, I'm just going to throw numbers out, 120-gig hard drive or a 250-gig hard drive, the operating system can take up a significant portion of that. And if you're already at a capacity where that drive is got a lot on it, and what you need to do is when you start up your system, go to your My Computer, find where you see drive C, right mouse click on drive C, and look at properties and look and see how much free space you have. You may or may not have an issue with whether or not you have room to do an upgrade. So then you start getting involved in costs of about, you know, whether or not the CPU can support, you know, what Windows 7 needs. So you start getting into, do I need to upgrade my CPU? Do I need to upgrade my memory? Do I need to upgrade the hard drive? You start getting into costs where you're probably better off just getting an entry-level system for, you can get laptops for that are decent for $250. Probably desktop systems for, you know, a few hundred, where you already have the operating system on, so then you just have to get your data over to the new system, and your memory is going to be a lot more, your CPU is going to be faster, you know, the overall experience is going to be a lot better.
So I can take a fence post and target practice with it as well.
Well, you know, the government, I don't even know what the government gives us for, you know, saying, hey, this is valued over a 3-year period or 5-year period, or you special expense it as a one-time purchase for the year from a business standpoint. But realistically, after 6 months, technology changes, and then, you know, you move on. So if you've had that system for, you know,
5 years
or 8 years, you've got an incredible amount of use out of it, and it's just time to do some window shopping and enjoy the experience.
And it's holiday season. It's gift-giving season, so maybe it's something to think about there, George. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Linda in Milwaukee has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Linda.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling about, I have a PC that I got in 2002 that still has XP on it, and I want to wipe it clean and, you know, recycle it somewhere. I have two questions. I know you've done this before, recommended before, but I can't recall what it was. A program for doing that for free. And my other question is that I've had this machine unhooked from the internet for 2 years now. If I go back onto the internet to get a program to clean it up, is there any danger to the of getting a virus or malware or whatever by using the modem that I have my phone and my Mac hooked up to now?
Wow. So you said this PC is from 2002?
And yeah.
It hasn't been run for two years.
And is there anything on it that you want?
No, there is nothing on it that I want.
I would find probably a Phillips head screwdriver. I would open it up. I would unhook the cables from that hard drive. I would unsecure it from the system, take it out, and you could either find a magnet, or you could probably take a hammer to it. Or you could just, you know, figure out how to open it up and expose it, and it'll be trash. I would not waste the time to download a program to try and, you know, scramble it. Or waste the time to try and reinstall the operating system over it a couple of times to erase it and scramble it. I think you're better off just, you know, using the little mechanical stuff and having fun with it.
The simple solution.
Yeah.
Okay.
Some people create clocks out of the platters. So you take the platter out of the hard drive, and then you've got, you know, your circle. And then you can, you know, paste numbers.
Great. Yeah. And use it for another 15 years.
Right.
There you go. Good luck, Linda.
Just trying to give you some fun things to do for the holidays.
And if you're worried about it, you can go online and you can probably find a little video of how exactly to do that.
Yeah, or fun things to do with your old computer.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
enough. I'm sure there's some probably entertaining. I have never looked for something like that, but it sounds like it'd probably be pretty entertaining.
Thanks, Linda. Gene in Madison, we go to you next. Hi, Gene.
Hi. First of all, I want to say how much I enjoy all of Larry's shows.
Thank you.
And I heard the low vision person call earlier, and I am a blind person. And I use VoiceOver with my Apple, and it's great. When I go to my email, VoiceOver reads my email to me. And what I would suggest is to call the low vision or the Council for the Blind in Madison. And they can get you started with a teacher that shows you how. What you do is you go to system preferences, and then you go to different things for the voiceover, things that make the color better for you to see. And they would even find a teacher. Now, I have no idea if you can do this with a PC, but with an Apple, you can.
Well, Gene,
that's awesome.
Yeah, that is awesome. Thank you so much for calling.
You're welcome.
You probably helped more than the original caller on that one. Thank you.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
All right.
Bye-bye. Appreciate it very much. All right. We always get lots of good calls from our listeners. Aaron in Madison, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Aaron.
Hey, good morning. Since it is the tech time of year, my question is, I live in a somewhat rural area just outside of Madison. I can't get decent high-speed internet, so I've got DSL through my landline provider. So that means I'm paying for a landline, paying for this DSL, paying for satellite TV, and of course I have a smartphone. My question to your guest is, would it be practical to even consider getting rid of the satellite TV, the landline, and the somewhat low-speed internet, and look for a cellular phone with an unlimited data package and perhaps a hotspot that I could run my laptop from?
I would love to know one to use too, because I live in a rural area and I have I have Usenet and DirecTV because we don't have a landline. You know, it really depends on where you are. You know, as far as an unlimited data plan, and even if you read the fine print on that. I know with, like, I used to have AT&T, and they say if you have unlimited, but if you get to where you're at like 4 or 5 gig, we could start to, you know, meter your access. You know, when you download Netflix or movies and things like that, especially at high resolution, they take up a lot of bandwidth, eats up a lot of bandwidth. If you have spotty service, it creates a problem with you know watching things. You really have to experiment, you know, and see, you know, based on where you are. Maybe talk to your neighbors and see what they're using to get a little bit, you know, do a little research, due diligence on your part before you go to a provider that you pick and say, you know, if this doesn't work, you know, do I have a 30-day period? And they may say, sure, you can do it for 30 days, and there might be a restocking fee, you know, based on trying it. That's because I've lived in homes, and I've visited people where you're like, you know, you're right on the fringe. I've been at places in a hotel room where I know if you stood on the bed and held your phone facing north, you know, you can make a call, but if you were at the door of the bedroom, you couldn't get anything. The cell service can be like an amoeba. So sometimes it feels like it's coming to you and then it's going away from you. Mm-hmm. So I think the best way to see if that would work as an option would be to do the research in your area, see, you know, what other people are doing. You may find out something great and, you know, go for it. But, you know, just make sure when you talk to the cell provider, see what their options are for, you know, a 30-day period and what the restocking fees are and try it. But when you're dealing with wireless internet, you know, be prepared for a little frustration. And okay, it could be a lot of frustration if, you know, you have things in your area that affect, you know, the signal, and that's different for everybody.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for your insight.
Yeah.
I
mean,
one thing that I did let's say 10 years ago is I actually put an omnidirectional antenna on the roof of my house and reached out for wireless internet signal, and it worked okay. But did I stream TV from it? No. I made a call to Venezuela to my son with Skype. Did it work? Yes. How many times did I try it? Once. So those things work. But again, everybody's got different surroundings, different areas, different options, different things to look at.
Yeah, there you go. Lots to think about there. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Marilyn emailed to ask, she heard that Kaspersky is a computer security program that has its origins in Russia. Is that true? And if it is, wouldn't that be a bad choice for security? You know, also, is Kaspersky aligned with Sophos?
You know, it is a security program. I do not have a lot of experience with it. I can tell you there are some good technology things that come from Russia. So, you know, the fact that it has its roots there does not mean that it's bad. A lot of these have 30-day trial periods. and they're downloadable. So, you know, it's just worth trying and seeing if you like. You know, what it comes down to is the part of its reputation and how good it is. So you can go out there and look at reviews of products. The other part of the equation is the interface. How easy is it for you to use? Do you feel comfortable with it, you know, getting your way around it? I know for me, I get frustrated when they go, okay, we just made an update and changed things. And now it's like, where did you put that, you know, that feature? How do I turn it on? How do I turn it off? And that goes for smartphones, you know, where, you know, they change things on you and it's like, why did they move it? You know, yeah. Why is it buried? So, you know, part of its reputation, look at the reviews and then also, you know, downloading a trial and see if you like the interface and see if it works well.
Let's go to Paul next in Whitewater. Paul, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a MacBook Pro and, oh golly, not too long ago, I installed Malwarebytes on it. Not sure if that's absolutely needed or not. I've heard a lot of people say that having protection for a Mac is not necessary. But anyway, I did it, and now I'm getting notifications from Malwarebytes that there is an upgrade available, but my computer won't accept it. I forget the exact message I received, but it's something like that it's, oh, golly, almost incompatible with or something like that, or not recognized by the Mac system.
How old is your MacBook Pro?
About 5 years old.
Okay. When was the last time you updated the operating system on it?
Very recently. I have the most recent one.
That's interesting. You would think that it would be compatible with it. I would probably... So you're saying you went to download the update and it said it wasn't compatible.
Yes, it was a message from the Mac system. It wasn't from Malwarebytes or anything, but just saying that you are trying to download a system that is not recognized by the Mac system. Something to that effect.
Yeah, you may want to contact Malwarebytes and ask them, you know, interpretation of the message, because they may be unaware of that.
Yeah.
It's possible.
Yeah. Okay. I would try it again and get the message, and then when you have the message,
yeah,
exactly
usually
what it says.
The reason I asked about, you know, how old your MacBook Pro was and about the updating is usually, you know, a compatibility message has to deal with the age of the operating system and the software that you're downloading, and that the two are not... Apple is saying, hey, I don't work with this because it's not up to speed.
So, yeah, that shouldn't be the issue, though, because right. As I say, we have the absolute latest. Is a security system an absolute must for a Mac system?
You know, I've had issues over the years with the Mac. It doesn't happen as often. So, you know, if you don't feel, you know, comfortable with just not having anything on it, it's fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's no reason not to have it.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at personal computers, finding the right tech gift, solving your computer issues with Peter Green of Infostar.com. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page.
Hey, Larry.
Yeah.
Before you get the next caller, the last person to call about the MacBook Pro and, you know, having protection on it, you know, I want to mention again, because, you know, a lot of smartphones out there, I have on my Android, my Samsung Galaxy S8, I have Avast Mobile Security. There are programs out there for antivirus on mobile phones. I would highly recommend that.
Even on iPhones?
Yeah, even on iPhones. You know, think of how many of those are out there. If boy, it looks like a huge problem waiting to happen where someone can figure out how to infiltrate, you know, security on the smartphones and, you know, just...
So Ave asked for...
Well, you can look them up on the Play Store for Android phones and
for iPhones?
And for iPhones, you know, search for apps. But, you know, just having some kind of protection on your phone would be a good idea. And also consider this, the Android operating system was an open source code operating system for many, many years before Google acquired it. So if anything's got holes in it, you know, it's...
That's going to be that.
That's going to be that.
Max in Manitowoc, thanks for waiting. Hello.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, guys.
Sure.
Hey, I actually don't really have a question. I just wanted to kind of expand on the comments that Pete there had about antivirus. I've been in the computer field or IT field, however you would like to describe it, for about 20 years. And unfortunately, due to the economy, I no longer run my own computer store. But when I did, the number one product that I'd always suggest would be the Malwarebytes. And I know the last caller kind of mentioned that same program. There is a free version, and then there's also a paid yearly version. The biggest difference between the two would be that the yearly one would prevent malicious software from getting into the computer, where the free one would allow that, but then it would be able to remove that after a scan. So I'd wanted to let your listeners know that this would be a program that they should be pretty keen to install. I know it sounds like an advertisement.
I've used it over the years. It works well.
Yeah,
I think it was recommended probably 15 something years ago is when I first heard about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when they still had the lifetime memberships.
Yeah.
And then the other thing too, I know this was a concern with the lady with the Kaspersky, but this is a French company, so it's not out of Russia. Mm-hmm. That's a concern for most people. And then one other thing before I go, the last caller with the MacBook Pro, I also own one. What I did notice, I had fixed my brother's MacBook, and I also got that free upgrade for the Malwarebytes because he likes to visit some more shadier kind of websites, so I have that on his computer. For some reason, it directs you to download the Windows version of Malwarebytes, not the Mac version, so that might be what that last caller's issue is.
Yeah, that would definitely be an issue.
Oh, yeah. I hadn't thought about that. Max, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Appreciate the call. Good tips there. Good advice. Mary Ann in Conover, it's your turn. Hi, Mary Ann.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a problem up here. I'm on data roaming most all the time. I use a Samsung Galaxy Note 5 smartphone, and I know you've been talking a lot about security, and when I go to, say, a coffee shop or McDonald's, those are unsecured networks, and I think I must have recently had an Android update because suddenly it won't even let me on those networks. And I know it is risky, but I was wondering if there's something I can put on my smartphone that would allow me to have some type of secure connection to an unsecured network, or if there's something else I could do to get on that network. Hmm.
So it's not allowing you to hook up to that network, those networks that you were before?
Yes, and I have a Samsung Internet, I have Chrome and Google Chrome, and I have Firefox all on my smartphone. And it's not, I get a pop-up that says, you know, you're trying to get onto an unsecured network, see details. So I click on that, and it doesn't really tell me anything except it's an unsecured network. And it won't let me go beyond that.
Have you tried making any changes in your settings?
I haven't. I had not made any changes. So I'm not exactly sure at this point what to look for because I haven't been, you know, I would jump on there now and then because, you know, if I was, you know, wanting to check something really quickly, And then I'd try to stay off. It's not like I'm on the internet all the time, but it's nice to be able to get on. And I don't know of anything that's changed.
Yeah, what you may want to try because of the update, and I know Samsung has been trying to get me to do an update in the last couple of days, and I'm like, oh, please, no. I don't.
Yeah.
But eventually you have to. Is you may want to go into your Wi-Fi settings, your connections and your setup, and play with some of the advanced controls for your Wi-Fi.
Okay.
And see if that, you know, affects a change that allows you to function the way you were before.
Okay.
There may even be something new that they added to it specifically for yours. I'm just throwing a guess out there. May or may not be that way. But there apparently were some changes that were made in the updates that are because of what you're going through.
And is there any way to increase my security from my end? I know you were talking a lot about some different products. Like I have VirusScan. I have a program that scans and says no threats are found. Is there something else that I should also have downloaded onto my phone to increase my security?
Is there any antivirus in one of those?
Yes. Okay. That's my AVG program.
Okay. No, that sounds
pretty. That should be enough.
Sounds good.
Okay. Yeah. And I do those scans routinely. I mean, and actually they're set up to do it automatically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Should be all right.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I will play with the settings then.
All right.
Yeah, the other thing is you may want to... I don't know who your internet service provider is for, or well, your phone provider, but you may want to pay a visit to their store and talk to them about it and see if they have any suggestions.
Okay.
You know, that'd be another route
way.
To go.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That sounds good.
Yep.
Well, thank you very much.
Yep. Good luck.
Thanks for calling. Yeah. You can play around with those settings. If it works good, if you can't figure it out.
Well, I know a lot about devices and computers and all that stuff, but I went on a cruise recently and they're saying, hey, download this app. And I had internet access, but it wouldn't let me download it. And I went to their help desk and I said, hey, you know, you guys are telling me to use this and I couldn't get on my phone. And, you know, they just made some adjustments and said, here you go.
Yeah.
You know?
It was over just like that.
Yeah.
Greg in Oconomowoc. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I have some information on cellular hookup to watch TV and cut the cable. I've been doing it for almost 9 years now. I have Verizon, and right now I have a Samsung J7, which is a pretty low-end phone, like a $150 phone. But the limitations are if you have is 3G, it's just going to buffer all the time. 4G, which is what I have with only one or two bars, it's fine. I watch Netflix. It hooks up to Fire Stick. It works pretty well. But I choose to watch the 720p instead of the HD.
Uh-huh.
If you have a lot of bars with 4G, you could watch HG or HD. But the downside is, the good news, bad news is I have an unlimited plan that's been grandfathered in from an old Altel plan. That's one of the very, very few plans that will not throttle. Everyone else will throttle you after, like you say, 5 gigs or so. But I use about 200 gigs a month, and 5 gigs would last me a day. So I don't think it would work with any of the unlimited plans right now, but I'm just speaking from experience. I do it all the time. You know, that's the rub.
200 gig? Oh, yeah. My God. 200?
I did hear a story where one guy set his area up as a hotspot. He was out west working as a pipeline worker in a small trailer park community. He let the entire community use his... a spot, and he was using over a terabyte a month, and which Verizon was not too happy about.
But, wow,
we're some of the few.
So you said you use Verizon.
Yeah, Verizon, exactly.
Which area, you don't have to tell me your address, but where do you live? Where is this?
I'm in Oconomowoc.
Okay.
And I'm kind of in a low spot, so I don't even get that good at 4G. Usually I have one or two bars, but it works good. But I think the thing to look for is you want to have 4G if you're going to video stream, otherwise it's going to buffer.
So what do you use for your hotspot in your house?
I have a program called PDANet. It's an app. And sometimes I tether, sometimes I do the Wi-Fi hotspot. It doesn't always work for Wi-Fi hotspot, but if I tether, everything works but my Fire Stick. So it's always kind of a cat and mouse thing. You're always kind of switching around. But it, it's been, I've been doing it for 9 years. It seems like the Wild West, but it hasn't ended yet. So.
That's great.
Oh, man.
At least there's someone out there doing it and doing it right.
Yeah.
Greg, that's wonderful. Thank you so much for calling.
Hey, thanks.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Oh, my goodness. And wow. He's getting by for a little amount of money there.
200 gig. That's insane.
That is an insane amount. And what would you be paying for if you had to pay for that?
Well, they say, he said, they say unlimited, but then they start to, meter you after 4 or 5 gigs. So you're never going to get there.
Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest. We are going to take a look at the news and the weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. Then we'll be back with Pete. He'll be with us till 12:30. You stay with us. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here taking a look at your personal computer today with Peter Green of Infostar.com. Give a call at 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Pete, you got a top 10 list for us today.
Yep. If you go to infostar.com, on the top left side, you'll see the top 10 archives or the current top 10. The first one is timeanddate.com, and it's a great resource dedicated to everything about time. Includes data and information about the moon, the sun, time zones, and more. Number two is based on, the fact that we had those wicked hurricanes go through the Caribbean area. It's called CaribbeanNationalWeekly.com, and it's a great news resource dedicated to the Caribbean nations and islands. So you might find it very useful if you got travel plans there. Number three is Yummly. YUMMLY.com, and it's resource dedicated to recipes. Search a million or more that are up there, and a lot of pictures make it look really good. Number four is called Review Meta, so it's review and then META.com. It's in a beta version, but they claim to analyze millions of reviews and help you decide which ones to trust. As related to this site, I would also check out another site called reviews.com. Number five, if you're looking for a new bed, there's a website called sleeplikethedead.com. My son actually found this and enlightened me about it. Claims to have unbiased ratings for hundreds of sleep products based on over 341,000 consumer experiences. Number six is called cleanlabelproject.org. And it's a nonprofit focused on health and transparency in consumer product labeling. So, baby products, food products, looking for contaminants and toxins, and they publish product ratings. Number seven is called StackExchange.com. It's one of the world's largest programming communities. Launched in 2010, it has a network that consists of 133 question and answer communities. Wow. Number eight is called SuperUser, which is also part of Stack Exchange. And the reason I mention this is because it's a resource that is a question and answer site for computer enthusiasts and power users. So there's a lot going on up in that website. Number nine is called WeMakeItSafer.com, also in beta, is a web resource that tracks consumer product recalls issued by the Consumer and Product Safety Commission since the Consumer and Product Safety Commission has done testing since January of 1999 for child restraint in vehicles and so forth. There's also the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. So this website, WeMakeItSafer.com, is trying to pull all that together to make it easy. And number 10, I recently used this. It's called Coupon Cabin, and it's an online coupon web resource with some interesting promos for online shopping. It includes lots of big online stores like Amazon, Walmart's gone big online, Kohl's, Home Depot, and more, where you can actually get money back for purchases made from online purchases. You have to allow for probably, I'm going to say maybe 45 days from based on when the product is paid for, delivered, and confirmed by them, and then they actually give you money in the form of like a gift card or Amazon credit or PayPal. You pick your way how you want to get it.
And I just quickly went to yumly.com, and you're right about the photos. It's a great recipe photos there. It looks really cool.
Well, you know, I wanted to make some banana bread, and I didn't have any eggs at home. And I was like, okay. So I found a recipe that didn't use eggs. I was like, ah, that's cool. That was great.
Well, Steve in Madison has a question for you here. So let's go to Steve. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a Dell Inspiron laptop, and whenever I use it, it all of a sudden starts to download what it tells me is a Windows 10 update to for new security enhancements, and it takes a while to download, but that seems to happen okay, and I can keep working while that's happening, and then it starts to install, and it takes quite a long time to install, but it tells me the percentage progress as it's going along, and it seems to do fine till it gets up in the 90%, almost 100%, and all of a sudden it kicks out and says that something prevented it from installing. There were several, forget what they called it, but it's something, a couple of something or others didn't install properly, so it just shut the whole thing installation down. And every time I use the computer, this thing comes back and tries to do this and fails. And I don't know, I guess I'd like to get it, if it's a real important enhancement, I'd like to have it complete. But I just like it one way or another to stop doing this every time I use my computer. Mm.
So what you're going to have to do is you'll have to do a little research online. What's going on is there's something stuck in your system that's preventing it from completing, and you will have to essentially clear out its attempts, you know, for what it's been trying to do.
How would I do that?
What you should do is go online and do a search where Windows 10 update won't complete. And there will probably be some tech links to some Microsoft documents, online documents, where it will give you instructions in terms of what you need to download or, you know, changes you need to make so that you can try it again.
You don't think it could be? I mean, a Dell tech guy about a year ago or two told me to download Iola Systems Mechanic, and said that's the best way to deal with viruses and everything. And
okay,
you don't think I need to go look with them or anything? Huh?
Probably not. What you could do is, if that has like to clean your system registry, sometimes if you have bad links in your registry, that can affect Microsoft's ability to do some updates.
You don't think it's just shutting off my antivirus thing temporarily so it can download or something?
Usually that's not what causes that kind of problem. Do you have any kind of error message? Because usually...
Yeah, I do, and I don't remember. I'm not at home.
Well, what you should do is go through it again, and if you haven't written down the error message, and then do a search on that error message, and that usually leads you to some pretty good answers as to how to approach fixing it.
Okay.
Because what's happened is it's almost like it's a clog, and you have to figure out how to get rid of that clog so it'll allow you to actually go through the download and installation process again.
There you go. Good luck. And take a take a photo of it with your phone. And
yeah, that's what I do that. Yeah. I do that all the time. Pictures help
then,
a lot.
Then you've got it right in front of you. You don't have to write it all down. And
yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck, Steve.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Brian in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Brian.
Hi there. I was just wondering if there is an app or program that will check all your bookmarks in your browser to see if they're still good yet.
Wow. That's a good question. I would probably do a search on a website like CNET.com mm-hmm. to see if there's something like that.
I've had that happen a couple times, so the bookmark was no longer good.
Yeah, that's, you know, that happens.
I manage a website that has a bunch of links on it,
uh-huh.
and every now and then somebody will tell me, you know, this link doesn't work, and there's a lot there to go through one by one to check them.
Yeah, I've got a website like that, too, and yes, it can be a daunting process.
Yeah. So where would you go again, Pete? What?
Probably CNET.com and do a search through there and see what they have.
Yeah.
There. Okay.
All right, good. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. We, Paul on Facebook would like some advice on and information on smartwatches, what you might recommend.
Well, Apple's leader in that. Samsung has got products out there, and there are probably some good knockoffs. Basically, a smartwatch, it gives you access to, you know, text messages. You can answer calls through them. It gives you some fitness stuff.
Sleep stuff.
I don't know all the different models out there, but, you know, those websites that I put up there on Infostar.com for making a purchase, those are the sites to check for reviews. And like I said, you know, you can go to CNET.com, probably, you know, if you're looking at a variety of smartwatches, see what you can find on Amazon and look at the user feedback, the reviews, and see how people feel about them. Engadget is another website. So I would highly recommend, based on what you're looking to get out of a smartwatch, to see, you know, has it been about 2 years since they've been out?
Yeah.
You know, and see what user experience is. Some people may say, you know, I used it for a month and, you know, didn't like it. People may say, I can't live without it.
I've got my Mickey Mouse watch that I wear every day, and I'm reluctant to give up my Mickey Mouse watch. I suppose I could have a watch on each hand.
I used to have a calculator watch, Larry. I gave up on that as soon as I switched to a smartphone.
DJ in Shell Lake asks if it's possible to adjust Windows 10 to boot up on the secure login page.
To adjust it to boot up on the secure login page. It does come up that way. If you set up your system for Windows 10 to have a user login, it should come up to be that's what it should come up to.
Yeah.
You know, when you start it up.
Yeah, why wouldn't it? Where else would it?
Well, if you don't have it set up for a user with a login, then it would just come up to your desktop. So if you set up a user, you know, so like if you're sharing your system between multiple users, then it would always come up to the login page because the user would have to put in their username and their password. It would go to their desktop. So you could have multiple desktops. But if you have it as your only system, it won't come up to a secure page unless you created it with a user account and a password.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. We have
some people at work want that.
Yeah.
They just want it to come up right away. I have mine come up with login.
Jim in Cambridge has something for us. Hi, Jim.
I just have a quick question. I seem to have an oversensitive mouse pad on my laptop. I just hover over something and it actuates, and it drives you nuts.
Two suggestions. One would be to just try and, you know, clean it. I don't know.
It's brand new.
It's brand new?
Yeah.
Then did you buy from a store or did you have it delivered?
I did have it delivered, but it was, you know, well packaged and such.
Uh-huh. Who's the manufacturer?
Dell.
Dell. I would probably call Dell. If it's okay. New and you're having sensitivity problems, they may say, you know, we've noticed that and we're working on a fix, or they may say we need to exchange it out because it's bad. So I would contact them directly.
Yeah, might get a free one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there any adjustment, you know, like in settings or something that would control?
Yeah, in the control panel, you can go to. I'm not sure where it is for the mouse, and sometimes Dell actually has separate pieces of software that allow you to make adjustments to it. So you may want to look on your system and see if there's something specific for Dell, you know, touchpad and mouse to make those changes. But yeah, okay. there are ways to make little adjustments.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Yep.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call.
You know, another useful site is, you know, YouTube for people that buy new products or they're looking at buying new products is to go to YouTube and do a search and just, you know, look at some of the videos that might be tutorials on how to use, you know, the device or the product and, you know, check it out and see how it's done. If you've gotten a new computer, new laptop, new tablet, new smartphone, not sure how to do something, using YouTube and looking at help, how to fix it, help, tutorials, all that works great.
Tim on Facebook has a MacBook Air with 20 gigs left in storage. Any suggestions for freeing up storage space? Is deleting past downloads... you know, can that be done on the hard drive? You know, ones he doesn't need anymore.
Boy, usually, you know, photos, videos, music files, documents, taking up a lot of space, you know, those are the big culprits. Or if you have a lot of apps, you know, look at your software that you've got on the system to see if, you know, it's worth keeping it around to free up space. So deleting, you know, software that you're not really using. Having an external drive to, you know, offload those things to is another good way to, you know, free up space.
You know, I was running out of space on my phone, and I deleted old messages.
Uh-huh, yep.
You'd be amazed at how much space, yeah. You know, people had sent photos and one thing and another, and I deleted all those, and I got a big chunk of new space.
Yeah.
Just from taking out and I took out a couple of apps, too, but the messages was where I got them.
Yeah, they add up. Especially if you've got a lot of text messages from a lot of people.
Yeah, I did. So, Margin Three Lakes, thanks for calling.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have an Acer computer and a laptop, and I keep frequently getting messages that I need to update the drivers, and I haven't done it because I wonder whether or not that's legitimate.
Well, if your system's working fine, you don't have to update those drivers. Sometimes updating drivers can cause problems. Every system is different. So if your system seems to be working fine and you're happy with the performance, you don't have to do it.
Okay, that's what I've been doing. I just have been saying, no, I don't want to do it. And
sometimes... You know, they make adjustments to drivers because a new device came out. And then they say to everybody, hey, we updated our driver. But if you're not an owner of that device, you're not going to be affected. But it will update the driver. So Is it a good thing to update it all the time? Well, in the case of, I mentioned earlier in the show with Windows 10, they were pushing out updates to their operating system, which were affecting video drivers. And we actually had to roll back the video driver to a prior version because it was creating a problem with the operating system. So the manufacturers are obligated to tell their user base that the drivers have been updated. Do you really need them? Not necessarily. You know, the other thing is, was it Adobe with the Flash Player, and there was one other thing from them. Anytime a new device would come out, a new iPhone, a new iPad, they were constantly throwing updates out there and just, you know, frustrating people. Oh, I got to update this again and again. And it would actually have no effect on their phone because it was for other people. But their manufacturer's obligated to tell you, hey, I've got an update for your driver. So,
yeah, I found that, had that too.
Don't fix it if it ain't broke.
Okay, very good. Excellent. Thank you very much.
Yep,
thanks for calling. Peggy on Facebook says she likes to use Chrome as her browser, but she constantly gets messages that say, your connection was interrupted, a network change was detected. What does this mean, and can she correct it?
I use Chrome, and I don't get those messages. It could be related to the internet service because if it's having a connection problem.
I use Chrome, too, and I don't get those.
Yeah. It could be something with the internet service that's just causing those messages. So
what would she do in that situation?
I would just check with the internet service provider and see, you know, and question them. Because they can look, if you call the internet service provider, they should be able to look at your connection and test your connection and also look at a history of your connectivity in terms of any issues with it.
Yeah.
In other words, if the cable modem's been reset or router's been reset or if it has a signal problem, they can look at all those things.
We have a couple of... we're starting to run a little bit out of time here. Any other tech problems that you've been noticing that have come up, Pete, that we haven't talked about today?
Well, what's troubling with me with the Windows 10 is in critical situations where you might have like transportation issues or a hospital environment where Windows is throwing out these updates. It really concerns me how they're just doing this almost helter-skelter without, you know, adequate testing and, you know, user beware to having to deal with these things.
Yeah, it's better not to update.
Well,
wait a while.
I hate to tell people that, you know, you got to hack into your system to shut them off, but it's not fun having to deal with it. It is not.
Well, Pete, it's always fun. Happy holidays to you, and
yep,
we'll
you
see
too.
You next year.
Yep.
Peter Green of InfoStar.com, our guest, and he'll be back next year. He's back on February 5th, actually, and we'll talk with him again. Tomorrow we'll be talking to best-selling Wisconsin author Jennifer Cheverini about her new book, Enchantress of Numbers. Interesting book. That's at 11. 11:45, we'll talk about new children's books that you may want to get your kids, the ones on your holiday gift list. And I hope you can join us for that. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store.